talk today, we have, how did that turn on?
No.
Still back there.
You can look back.
Yeah.
Here we go. Okay, we have Hume Feldman, who's going to talk about funny things.
Just one funny thing.
Just one thing. And that's my first time with a hockey stick, so be careful. Oops, not meant. So, first of all, I just want to mention, because I just heard today that there was a June was a convergence month in Perimeter. And this has nothing to do with that. So, I wish I knew that, but I didn't know that. So convergence, when I'm talking about convergence, what I mean is that for a long time, we all knew that there are no flows, no cosmic flows on large scales meaning kind of 100 megaparsec or larger. The problem is that nobody actually showed it, but we all knew that. So we kind of thought for a long time how to actually show that observationally or analysis of observations. And for many years, we kind of talked about it, Mike and myself and various and Rick and various other people. And we couldn't figure out how to show it because velocity field data was crap. And velocities altogether, when you want to actually extract peculiar velocities, the errors are proportional to the distance, not to the velocity. So you cannot really go very far because the errors become very large. So let me kind of go through what we try to do and remember, what we actually had in mind is that we're going to show that there are no flows in large scales. That's the funny thing that happened. So what do? We have a bunch of peculiar velocities, okay? Extracted from some galaxies or groups or clusters or whatever it is that you want with some positions, velocities, uncertainties. And we assume that the observational errors are Gaussian, and I'll get back to that. And then we model the velocity field as a uniform streaming motion, okay? So we just do kind of averaging of this thing. And this assumption turns out to be wrong, but we tried to fix that because we thought maybe that's the reason why we don't see what we expect. Okay, so the statistics of these line of sight velocities are biased because we have nonlinear flows. Especially on small scales. So what we want to do is form some moments as linear combination of peculiar velocities that look like that. So we have a moment, which is a weight times the line of sight peculiar velocity. And we assume that if we have a dense field that occupies a large volume, then we can get rid of all nonlinearities. So the measure line of sight peculiar velocity we can model as r dot v, so just the line of sight velocity plus some error. And this error is a Gaussian, and Sarah just showed us this kind of thing. We basically have the error in the measured velocity plus something that I usually call the stuff that we don't know about, and we hide everything in this thing. So this is all the nonlinear kind of variance that comes in to the error in the measured line of sight velocity. Then we form some kind of a covariance matrix, which are these moments. And they have the weights. And this term is just ensemble average of these things. And because the errors are not correlated with the velocities, we don't have a cross term, and we just have two terms. So the covariance matrix can be written as two terms, again, no cross term because of the independence. And the first term, the error term, second term, the error term, is just to do with the uncertainties and the nonlinear variance times the weights for each galaxy. And then we have the velocity covariance matrix, which is a convolution of a window function times the power spectrum. Okay, and it doesn't really matter exactly what kind of analysis you want to do. This is basically what you have underlying everything that you do. The window function, which is a tensor window function, the square of the window function has to do with the weights, and then it's just some kind of a power spectrum of the positions of the galaxies.
So why is it 2d2k hat? It's the two-dimensional.
It's why is it the square thing?
No, I'm just saying d2k hat. What is that?
It's just around the whole sky.
It's angular dependent.
Right. It doesn't depend on the distance. Okay. So it depends on the weights and the distribution of points. And that tells us what kind of scales contribute to the value of the power spectrum, of the covariance matrix, or the value of the moments. Okay, so let me give you two examples of how we do this. First of all, we try to estimate the bulk flow as accurately as possible. So we do kind of a Bayesian analysis, which is the bulk flow maximum likelihood estimate, MLE, first done by Kaiser, then by Seven Samurais, various kind of historical figures that nobody knows about today.
No Kaiser.
Pardon?
We are still big fans of Kaiser.
Yes, Kaiser is still alive in our hearts, isn't he?
He's still alive.
Is he here? He's not here. So, whoever is not here, we don't know. So that's exactly it. If he's not here, we don't know anything about him. Okay? He did some stuff before that entered this room. Here it is. At least part of it, okay? Here, according to Kaiser, the weight looks like that, where this is kind of in some way a correlation of the directions in the sky, and this is this kind of thing. So the weights depend on the spatial distribution and the errors. Now, since the distribution and the errors are survey dependent. Each survey has a different distribution, has a different error distribution. So the window functions are survey independent, and so is the bulk flow that you extract from it. So doing this kind of thing, basically what you do is if you find the bulk flow for a particular survey. Another example, let's find the bulk flow as a function of scale. So let's consider an ideal survey, survey that we do not have, but we pretend we have, which has a very large number of points, isotropic distribution, and a Gaussian falloff. The bulk flow moments of this kind of survey is just the U's are just this, so this is the kind of weight that we're talking about. Okay, now what we want to do is do the what we call maximum variance weights for the UI, which minimizes the variance of this moment to the ideal moments that I just showed you before. Okay, I want to minimize that. So no matter what kind of survey I have, I'm going to try to make it as close as possible. I'm going to organize the weights of each galaxy such that I make it as close as possible to this ideal survey. And that provides a survey-independent Gaussian bulk flow that can be compared across surveys. So it's not, does not depend on the particular survey that I look at, but it depends on how my minimization scheme. So the bulk flow moments that they depend on the scale, which is this R sub G, the Gaussian fall off, and the distribution of the ideal survey, which I control. So bulk flow in general represents a bulk motion of galaxies in a survey. The MLE is an estimate of the bulk motion of specific survey galaxies. So it's kind of a parochial type of thing. It only tells you about this particular survey, and it's a number. When I do this MV, the minimum variance moments, they're estimates of a bulk flow motion of a given Gaussian volume, parameterized by this Gaussian width, and traced by the survey of galaxies, and it's actually a function of scale. So it all comes down to the weights. How I weigh my galaxies tell you what I get out of this.
Can I ask you, so this, I mean, this is equivalent to just the power spectrum of velocities, right? I mean, it's
yes.
Equivalent information,
right.
Right?
So what I want to do is design the window functions, and that tells me about the weights, to address specific measurements. So I estimate the quantity that is survey independent. In other words, can be compared between different surveys and can be estimated well by linear theory. In other words, I remove all nonlinearities out of this or as much as I possibly can. So I'm just here, I just calculated a bunch of window functions. Okay, and I want to show you what the window functions tell you about these surveys. And I have 9 different catalogs here, and I calculate the window functions. So first of all, it tells me about scales, okay? The width here tells me about the scale of the survey. Okay, so different ones give me very different scales. It also has a problem with aliasing, which means surveys probe small scales very differently. You can see, okay, different surveys probe small scales differently. Another thing is about isotropy, and if you look at the different directions of the window function, again, they look very different. In other words, they probe different scales in different ways to x, y, z, to a 3-dimensional directions, whichever one you want. Okay, so here I'm going to just show you a few surveys, and you don't really have to memorize them. But there are quite a few of them, some group surveys, some cluster surveys, obviously have fewer points, some just galaxy surveys, which has more, and some of them are very isotropic, some of them are not so much. Some of them are compilations of different surveys. Some of them are just surveys themselves. Okay, so here I show for one of the surveys, the reds are things coming towards us. I mean, sorry, going away from us. Blue going towards us. This is the distribution of redshift and velocities. And these are the velocity distribution and the error distribution. And the size of the symbol here is the weight that I give it. The larger the symbol, the larger the weight. This is the Kaiser way, the MLE way of doing that. And that tries to minimize the absolute variance of the bulk flow that I get out of this. This is the weights for the MV for particular scale. Each scale gives you different weights. So what's really happening here? What am I trying to do here? Okay. Remember, the covariance matrix, the velocity part of the covariance matrix, is a convolution of the window function and the power spectrum. Okay, so let's say that this is my power spectrum. It doesn't matter exactly what it is, but this is more or less a good model of the power spectrum. Okay, this is my window function for these particular surveys. Okay, so what I do is that I convolve this thing with that thing, and what I want, peculiar velocity, the bulk flow, what I want is the large-scale bulk flow, okay? The stuff that comes from small k's, okay? Everything else, when I convolve this, I get a lot of stuff coming here. I get a leakage of power from small scale to large scale. So I get something that looks like a bulk flow, but actually is not. Okay, and that comes from the convolution of my window functions with the power spectrum. Okay, so what I want is to remove all this stuff. Okay, and that's what I achieve by doing the MV. I make window functions that have very little contribution from small scales. So I remove a lot of my aliasing. I remove a lot of this leakage into hard scales. So I just want to give you an idea here. This is one particular survey. This is the weighted distribution according to the MLE. So as you can see, I look only in very, very small scales. I don't really probe large scales at all, because the weighted distribution only looks at these kinds of things, and then I have this. The weighted distribution for the MV for a particular radius, R equals about 50, I get this kind of distribution. And this is a Gaussian that tells me, I mean, this is just a model of the distribution, the selection function for the distribution. So here, what I do is I plot the MLE, which has no scale information, so it stays the same no matter what scale I look at. This is the ideal function, the black line here, and these are the three directions for the window functions. And that is for 15 H inverse megaparsec, RG. This is for 27, and I choose 27 because then the MLE and the MV window functions have the same width.
So what is ideal weight function?
Pardon?
What is ideal weight function?
The ideal weight function is what happens if you have no errors and everything is just perfect in your
measurement errors.
No measurement.
Same relative distribution as your survey, but no measurement there.
That's right, exactly it. Okay, and this is when I look at much larger scales, 50 megaparsec scales, and I can look only in here. So you can see that when I convolve this thing with my power spectrum, I get very, very little contribution from small scales. So this is just what happens if I dial back and forth my scale, okay, my RG. So you can see R sub G here, that's the scale of the survey, and these are the MLEs. So if I properly design my window functions, the MV formalism, we choose a Gaussian distribution. It is possible to choose any distribution you want. There is nothing special about the Gaussian, except the fact that when you Fourier transform a Gaussian distribution, you get very little ringing. You can do a top hat, and I plotted the top hat here with the Gaussian. So the blue is the top hat, the red is the Gaussian. And another thing is that the scales are different, okay? Because the Gaussian has things coming from very far away, a Gaussian width of 50 is the same, more or less, same width as a top hat with 100 megaparsec scales. More or less, not exactly a factor of two, but close to a factor of two. Okay, this is for, again, the same kind of thing. I just compare these two. I just wanted to show you the fact that there is the top hat, although a lot of people use top hat window functions, but the top hat window functions produce ringing, which, again, this part of the power spectrum will leak into your...
So that's just the window function. You multiply by the power spectrum.
It doesn't dominate, but it has an effect. And this thing, remember, the ringing comes from small scale, so it can go plus or minus. It can add, can make you, give you larger velocities or smaller velocities, depending on the survey itself. Okay, so in here, the contribution is much smaller, so it doesn't really affect your final result. Okay, so this is one thing that we've been doing. Now, another problem that I talked to about before, I kind of mentioned, whether these things have Gaussian errors, okay? So if you want to determine the line of sight peculiar velocity, it requires a measurement. V is equal to the redshift minus h times the distance. At large distances, we can include the effects of acceleration, which is basically this q. And since redshift is not additive quantity, you don't just add redshifts, then you can show that 1 plus the z looks like that. And you can also see this done by these papers, and also, I think, by Lyndon Bell that did that many, many, many years ago. So the peculiar velocity can be shown to be this kind of thing, okay? So the determination of line of sight peculiar velocity requires measurement of the galaxy distance. Problem is that, in general, we don't measure the galaxy distance. We measure the distance moduli, which is in some way the log of the distance. So the errors are Gaussian of the moduli, not of the distance. So the distance errors are skewed. They're not Gaussian. In other words, the estimated distances, the ensemble estimated distances are not equal to the actual distance. And because of that, the estimated velocities do not give you actual v. So these are undesirable features because everything about our analysis requires Gaussian distribution of errors. So this will lead to biases. So a proposal is, let's use the velocity as a log of Cz divided by r. And if you have log distance, you have Gaussian distributed errors. The uncertainty, delta V, is proportional to delta L, where delta L is the uncertainty in the log distance. And because of that, the log of Re is actually equal to log of R. And because of that, the estimated velocities is very close to V, especially when V is much smaller than Cz.
Does this really make a big difference for, I mean,
Well, the problem is that we found velocities, and I'll show you that in a few minutes. We found velocities, large scale velocities on kind of scales of 100 or more megaparsec that are very large, very different than what we expect. So anything that we didn't do well should be looked at. That's it. But in general, not really. So we have this kind of uncertainty, and we assume that the actual velocity is small compared to the redshift. And I don't mean the estimated velocity. The estimated velocity can be very large. Well, the estimated velocity can be in thousands of kilometers a second, because the errors can be so large, because you look at things. But the actual velocities are hundreds of kilometers. Okay, but so we assume that this is something like that. Okay, so much, much smaller than the speed of light. And that should hold for galaxies at these kinds of distances. Until 10 minutes. Okay, I'll go through this. Also, it's one of these things that I will be told, is that really important? And it's not really important, but these are the kinds of questions that you're asked when you come up with a result that gives you something that is not compatible with Lambda CDM or with the standard model. Okay, when you look at the probability of a galaxy being at some distance, you have some normalization constant, probability distribution of a galaxy being in a position given by the Tully-Fisher. So in other words, whether the Tully-Fisher or the sigma or fundamental plane or any kind of distance measurement that you want to use, how correct it is, the probability of finding a galaxy with this kind of apparent magnitude, and the density distribution along the line of sight. Okay, so what I want to suggest is instead of calculating that at the distance, we calculate that at the distance moduli. So let me give you an example, a uniform density of galaxies with log distance, just a little bit simpler than the moduli, but it's basically the same kind of thing. So galaxies are more likely to scatter from larger to smaller volumes. So in other words, it's more likely that you'll see a galaxy that is outside of your volume scatter in than a galaxy inside your volume scatter out, because there's just more volume outside than inside. Okay, so this probability of large-scale structure goes as r squared dr, and the probability, so if I go to the log distance, so the probability of L goes as e to the 3L. DL. And I assume that the magnitude of L is more or less a constant, and the Tully-Fisher is a Gaussian distribution with some uncertainty delta. So P, which is this times that, goes as a Gaussian times e to the 3L, which is actually another Gaussian. So PL remains a Gaussian with the shift outwards by 3 deltas squared. So as long as the product P magnitude times PLSS is proportional to some kind of a power spectrum, to power law of R, then the region around the galaxy will not really be affected, and the shift will just be a shift, but maintaining a Gaussian distribution, which is really what we want. So the Manquist-corrected distant modulus will still have a Gaussian distribution of errors. Okay, so I just want to show you here, they kind of look the same. So this is, for some catalog, the distribution of velocities with the Gaussian, but if I take the log of that, you can see that this is skewed, okay? And this is not. I show you various things, and I will not go through all of them in detail, but in general, what you see is that the new estimator has a Gaussian distribution of errors, has exactly what you would expect. It's not skewed, it's not biased in any way, it sits on the right thing. It does have tail, but just look, it's two galaxies out there, stuff like that, okay? Okay, so velocities.
So I guess that's really a problem with the estimator, presumably, right?
That's right. The estimator itself, and I showed you why, the estimator itself has a Gaussian error in the modulus, not in the velocities. Okay? But we always estimate the velocities to be just linear.
I guess there are outliers in the fundamental plane or something like that, right? So those are the things that are so far.
There are very few galaxies, especially on the large side, on very large velocities, that do not follow this
yeah.
thing. But there are very few. I mean, we had 5,000 galaxies. We had maybe 3 or 4 that were out there. No, that's 4 sigma, you said? Probably even more. Okay, so these are the velocities that if I put lambda CDM in, that's what I would expect. So this is a variance. Lambda CDM says there are no velocities with this variance. Okay? And this is what I get. X and Z, I don't get anything, but the Y direction, I get very large velocities. Okay? And in the large scale, kind of 50, and these are Gaussian radius of the window of the window functions that are 50 megaparsec or so. Okay, the difference between the blue and the red is what happens if I use the redshift or the distance as my distance indicator. Okay, and what I see is that here on large scales, I get, instead of getting convergence, instead of this thing being basically like that, which is what you would expect, I get larger and larger velocities. Okay, I cannot really go further than that because I just don't have data.
What is that NMOM?
Oh, that's the number of moments here, 3 moments. I can go to higher and higher moments.
If you go to 5 moments, do these results change?
Well, no, this is a dipole. This is basically the dipole directions. Okay.
Yeah, this is the dipole direction, but surely, like the inference on dipole depends what you assume about quadrupole and so on, right?
Right. I can go to quadrupole. The problem is that the data is such that I don't really get any real data that tells me that it's different than zero. Okay. So we calculate it.
No, but my point is that marginalizing of a quadrupole affects your dipole measurement.
That's right, but, well, it does, and it doesn't have a large effect on it.
Okay.
And we tried it with calculating, without marginalizing, and we get basically the same kind of results. Different surveys give us very similar results. Here, the CF2 is a new catalog that Brent Tully came up with maybe a couple of years ago. And we all of a sudden saw kind of smaller, same kind of direction, but smaller amplitude of velocities in this direction. And we wanted to know if it's because he has a better catalog and all the catalogs that we used are just screwed up some way or the other, or what's going on. And then we found that if I remove one little catalog, which is maybe 10 or 15% of the Tully catalog, I right? That's the numbers, I think. I get back my kind of three sigma, almost three sigma results in large scales.
So can you explain what is that EFAR?
EFAR is the CF2 is a compilation of many catalogs.
Right, right.
And it was supposed to be calibrated together in a way. And what we found is that this EFAR catalog depresses these velocities.
The EFAR moves in the opposite direction.
Exactly. And we had the group catalog, and it's exactly the same kind of thing. The EFAR catalog, which again is a small subset of the CF2 catalog, suppresses.
Do you have this spot for the EFAR catalog?
I don't have it with me.
But it must be like opposite VY, right? It should be because if it has the
right,
it should have the opposite
right
sign.
Yeah. Okay, so here, if you look at this green dot here, that is the direction of the flow in the sky. And I'm going to move this RG from 10 to 60. And here you have the distribution of points, the weighted distribution of points for R equals 10. These are the real distribution of points, not weighted. This one is the MLE distribution of points, weighted distribution of points. And the black line is the Gaussian, is the model, the selection function for the catalog. So you can see that this becomes smaller and then becomes larger, exactly the same thing that I showed you before. It becomes larger and it moves, and in large scales, it's somewhere around there, to this direction. Think same kind of thing with a different catalog. Okay, so this is the thing, that's the funny thing that happened, okay? I wanted to show, we were totally sure that we found the method to show that there are no peculiar velocities on these scales. And that's what we got. Very disappointing, or actually, in physics thing, don't ever think you're going to get what you expect. So if we have, and here I didn't show you the higher moments, but if you take the dipole over the quadrupole, you should get the distance to the source, if it's a potential flow. If the reason for these flows, just think about it. You have this ball, 100 megaparsec diameter, Gaussian ball, okay, and it's moving at 400 kilometers a second, okay? It's moving because of something. The obvious thing that you would think about is that it's moving because there is some kind of a source, huge kind of matter of over density at some distance. And that tells you basically where it is. I know the direction because I know the direction of the flow. Now, obviously, I do not expect one mass concentration there to pull everything, but kind of a distribution of stuff, bunch of voids in the backside, bunch of overdensities in the front side to make me go there. This is what I find for the source in the x direction. This is in the y direction. So I would expect some place at almost 300 kilometers, I mean megaparsec, h inverse megaparsec, at these kinds of scales.
So now is your quadrupole okay?
I did calculate the quadrupole. Okay? It's very small, as you can expect. This divided by that gives me a large number. So this is very small. It's not that it's not okay, it just doesn't, there's the quadrupole is small.
Yeah, but exactly. But so one component of dipole is weird, and all components of quadrupole are okay.
That's right.
But why is this error symmetric in this component? If we say you're dividing by some small number that's consistent with zero, so that could become infinite, this ratio, right?
Well, it's not, because this is never zero. It's small, but it's not zero.
But basically, only a source of infinite distance will give you zero quadrant polynomial.
So that's the theoretical statement. But yeah. I'm saying when you observe it.
Yeah, with the
quadrupole. I say the quadrupole is small, but
it's small, right. You can see in one of the papers that we published the quadrupole as well. Okay, so obviously the question is, if that's the case, where is it? This is the MV flow direction. This is when they did the same kind of analysis with the same kind of the MV formalism on the 6DF, that's what they got as well. Okay. Larger errors, but more or less the same thing. The 6DF is just one part of the sky, I mean, one side of the sky, so our surveys were full sky surveys. There are some other people that came up with things that show very large, a lot of power in these kinds of scales. Well, here you have lots of power, but that's small scale, so we don't care. But there is also this point here, which they showed in this one, that shows that there is anomalously large power on these kinds of scales. Here is another way of doing the same kind of thing. So what do we want to do here? This is the power spectrum from, I stole this thing from, yes.
But the paper by Thomas, I think actually Ross showed that in the quadrupole example of SDFS, which they use, that's just a systematic which they have accounted.
Thank you, I did not know that. Good thing to know. Okay, I will never use this slide again. Thanks to you, Florian. I like this slide. It was kind of pretty. So if this is just the lambda CDM power spectrum that goes through all the points, except, of course, here, but then you need to add some nonlinearities here. And when you add them correctly, they go through all the points. So if we go just doing that, all we need to do is just add a little power on the backside here, which we don't really know what it is. And as you can see, with these kind of error bars, horizontal error bars, we can fit this thing. The problem is it's not going to be a lambda CDM thing, because you have this extra power. So you have to modify that. It's not that I'm advocating that, okay? I don't really know what to do with it, and I still think that maybe somewhere we made a mistake, or our surveys are crappy. I don't know, Mike is now working. These guys are working now on a new survey. Hopefully, it will give us some kind of an indication whether we're right or wrong, I don't know. You don't really need much power to add here. Very little power will do. Now, the thing about this, and I don't really have time to show you, because I think I'm supposed I'm out of time, so I will not show you. But the idea here is that basically in our universe, in the lambda CDM universe, about 2% of the places in this universe will see these kinds of velocities. Okay, so it's not impossible, just unlikely. As I said, kind of 2.5 sigma-ish result here. But if it is true, then you would expect, so these are the kind of concentrations over densities that we know of, the Shapley and the great attractor, Centaurus. What we need is something there. Okay, I tried to look at various surveys, but it's very difficult to look at something that is that far away with that in with enough resolution to actually see if what's going on there.
No, but if your quadrupole is really noisy, then you should have a massive error on this distance, right?
That's right, and can be, yeah. But still, you need, again, I do not, as I said before, I do not expect that you'll have this huge mass concentration there and that pulls us and that's it. It's a distribution. Okay, so let me just finish this thing. First of all, this MV method redesigns the window functions in a way that minimizes aliasing, and that is really what we're trying to do. We want to look at the the linear velocity field. And this is a way to accomplish that. It predicts the bulk flow and volume of a particular scale. The linear theory correctly predicts the flow, and nonlinear small scale stuff does not affect the estimator. So if we have direct control of the window functions, we can compare bulk flows across different surveys. And it allows us to determine these things. Bulk flow on these scales, and when I say these scales, I mean this Gaussian ball, disagrees with standard lambda CDM to about a little bit more than 2.5 sigma. If the distances are underestimated, in other words, if we systematically think that the distances are smaller than what they are, then we will agree with. So that's one possible solution to this thing. We may need more power in large scales, but it does agree with lambda CDM on smaller scales, kind of 35-inch inverse megaparsec Gaussian distribution. So I just want to remind you, Waits rule. Okay, this is no matter what you do, when you try to do any kind of cosmological analysis, how you weigh your data points will determine what you get. And what we should always try to do is try to measure something that is survey independent, clearly. So final thought, 1 minute, promise. Just because we can measure something accurately, that is with small errors, where is my, supposed to have errors here, I don't know what happened. It does not mean that it's important or interesting. Just because you have a name for something like bulk flow, for instance, sigma 8, okay, does not mean that you mean the same thing as I do, okay? Names are not guarantee for, just because we have a word to describe it, we always use it properly. So not only that we don't mean the same thing, but we use it sloppily sometimes. And just because you talk about specific scale, here I have a bulk flow on 100 megaparsec scale. If you don't specify what this 100 megaparsec scale, it's meaningless, okay? As I showed you, a Gaussian scale and a top hat scale differ by a factor of 2. So when I tell you I found velocities on 100 megaparsec scale and I don't tell you what scale I'm talking about, you don't really know much. So words matter. Thank you.
Okay, maybe it's time for one quick question, if anyone has it.
So is the KSZ consistent with bulk flow on
these
scales?
The KSZ does not have enough information to actually for me to get a bulk flow. I can tell you, I cannot, but some people can tell you what is perhaps the velocity, the KSZ velocity of a particular cluster.
Yeah, so now if we look at all the clusters on this
plane. Right. Now, there are a group of people that did that. Kaslensky.
Mm-hmm. No. I mean, okay, but besides those crazy people, there's also
other... I did not say that, right? I did not mention crazy here even once. It's very difficult to know exactly what is the bulk flow of this volume. It's very difficult to take the number of KSZ clusters that we have, figure out what is the bulk flow of their ensemble. There are very few of them on a huge volume. Okay, so the errors will be very large when you talk about the ensemble. Okay, I was going to say that there were people that did that, tried to find the dipole in the sky of these things and got with velocities of kind of 1,000 kilometers per second on scales of a gigaparsec. Okay, think about that. If that's a potential flow, then that means that the source is way, way, way outside the horizon. So a bunch of people came up with, of course, models, you know, give theorists a problem, they will get the model of a tilted universe, stuff like that. I would not buy it right now. We don't have enough data for the KSZ. I wish we did, because it's the coolest of all distance measurements, okay? Because it's the only, well, one of the only ones that does not depend, the errors do not depend on the size, on the distance. They depend on the velocity, which is exactly the kind of indicator you want or estimator you want. And that's basically the only one that we have.
0.1 microkelvin is pretty damn cool.
0.1 microkelvin
but
is pretty damn cool.
We didn't hear about measurement of KSC at 4 sigma, roughly.
So maybe, I don't know if that's the same thing, but there's definitely a Planck paper, 2013, that finds an upper limit on dipoles. So it's, it might be different analysis.
It's completely different scales than these.
Right.
These are kind of gigaparsec scales, and you're right, and that's one of the things that told Kuklinski to stop doing that. Didn't convince him one bit, but that's a different story.
From this dipole, the upper limit at 95% confidence limit is like 250 kilometers per second.
So what scale was that on?
The whole sky.
No, but
the
depth is
higher, right? That's
similar to
Huygens, I would
guess. Yeah, kind of gigaparsec scales, and what you see
the 0.2, 0.3.
I suppose this is
0.100 megaparsecs.
But I guess the question you can ask is that if there are larger velocities on a scale of 100 megaparsec, if they exist everywhere, than you would have said in KSC. And I think that was the kind of thing that Emmanuel was talking about this morning, because you measure velocity on 100 megaparsec scale, right?
So for this Planck paper.
No, your measurement.
So my analysis, these galaxy directors is 0.6.
Right,
so
but the galaxy director, but that you're talking about velocity fluctuations on 100 megaparsec scale.
Right.
So that's my point. It's a typical everywhere.
Typical size of your blood would be
right. Then you would see it elsewhere, but I guess 4 sigma might not be enough to rule this out, but I guess you could.
No, but what you would see, actually, if his measurement is correct and my measurement is correct, then what you'll see is something that goes like that and then falls down, okay?
Uh-huh.
And this is kind of 100, 200 megaparsec, uh-huh, and then it starts converging. So convergence will happen, but not on 100 megaparsec scales, but on 2 or maybe 3.
Okay, let's thank you and all the listeners.